the chicken as we know it really didn't come about until the Chicken of Tomorrow contest. Now, the goal of this was to turn the chicken into a kind of pig or cow to produce a fat breast that would really be an alternative to these other two popular meats. So the animal breeders got together and there was a contest. And in fact, there was one chicken that was chosen in a large event that took place in a stadium in Arkansas where the vice president of the United States was present. Hey, this is a big deal. And this particular breed was crowned as the Chicken of Tomorrow. And from that breed, we get almost all of today's modern chickens and really changed the way we think about chicken and certainly changed a lot of our dietary habits.
Let's imagine you're the vice president of the United States and you get to attend the Chicken of Tomorrow event, which, you know, sounds like, well, I've got a bad day. But this event was a defining moment in history, the beginning of what we all now call the broiler chicken.
The humble chicken, Jay.
Humble, but boy, lives everywhere. That was Andrew Lawler. He knows just about everything there is to know about chickens. He's written a book about them. And in a minute, he's going to tell us this hilarious story about a misadventure he had chasing chicken bones halfway around the world.
You want to talk about misadventure? I have a chicken story for you. Probably not that unfamiliar to people who keep chickens. So my brother keeps about 100 chickens just an hour west of here. And he went out for the day. He's always home on the farm, but he goes out for the day and a pine marten creeps in to the barn and slaughters about 40 to 50 of the chickens and eats only one or two. And so his partner, a vegetarian, I might add, comes out and finds the carnage and has to clean it all up herself. He gets home and there's just a trap for the marten that's been borrowed from the neighbors. And he has this job to do. Anyway, he caught the marten and couldn't bring himself to do anything but drive it across the river and let it go on the other side of the bridge.
That's such a cheery story. I've got a more cheery story, Nikki, now that you've brought us all down with chicken slaughter. I would like to say I took part in an experiment, but it was for television. So, you know, it's not really an experiment. But it was based on a real experiment that asserted that chickens prefer attractive people. And the chickens in the experiment would react to faces and peck at one, one or the other. So we decided to reenact this, went to a farm in Alberta, hired some models, attractive people, and somehow ran into some random Swiss couple who were tourists. So I'm not sure they really understood what we were doing, but we set them up as the unattractive alternative.
Did you tell them that?
Well, we must have told them in some sense, but I don't remember the actual words. Anyway, and then four models put little piles of chicken feed in front of both, let the chickens out. It was amazing. The chickens all went to the models. Of course, I had to replace the random tourist couple. And at the end, and I'm not bragging about this, one chicken came to me instead of the models. So I think
Jay, there's a chicken for everyone.
Yeah, exactly. There is a chicken for everyone. And I had mine that day.
Okay, well, besides your amour, what is the first thing you think of when someone says chicken?
You know, I actually think of cuisine. And think about it. Chicken tikka masala, chicken mole, coq au vin, KFC. Every country has its signature chicken dish. What do you think of when, you know, you hear chickens?
Well, I think of those things too. And now I'm hungry. But after researching for this, I also think about a bird that is smart, that is beautiful. For example, my friend Megan has this awesome Instagram feed of her very beautiful heritage birds. And I think of a bird that's had a pretty pivotal role in human history. And that is where we are going today. We're going to start way back with the red jungle fowl, the OG chicken. And we're going to move through the ages all the way down to the broiler chicken. And then we're going to finish up with our new friends, the backyard chickens. And that's definitely become a thing in the pandemic.
Yeah, no kidding, eh? There's a bit of a wave of backyard chickens. And, you know, famous people like Prince Harry and Meghan Markle have backyard chickens. Dalia Monteroso, who calls herself president of Chickenlandia, has a pretty cool take on how they're good for our mental health. And she definitely wants more chickens everywhere. She's going to be giving us a few tips later on for anyone who's actually thinking about raising barnyard chickens. But meanwhile, Nikki, we can ponder some eternal chicken questions, like which came first, the chicken or the egg?
Well, I want to cry foul on that one, Jay.
Oh, good, Nikki, good work.
I actually think the eggs probably had something to do with how we came out of the primordial soup as animals moved to land. But that's a whole other episode.
Okay, how about your favorite chicken cartoon character?
You know, I was thinking about the chicken lady skit from Kids in the Hall. It was so unnerving, disconcerting, and weird, but it has stuck with me for life. How about you?
Oh, Foghorn J. Leghorn. I say. He was the star of Looney Tunes.
I loved him.
He was actually based on an actual senator from one of the southern states in the U.S. But let's run over one other quick expression, running around like a chicken with its head cut off. You sort of get what that means, right? You're confused. There actually was a headless chicken that lived for 18 months. Mike, the headless chicken. His owner went to lop off his head for dinner and kind of missed and didn't take it all. And Mike survived. And now they have the Mike the Headless Chicken Day annually in Fruta, Colorado.
Wow, that's quite something. I feel like I've been channeling Mike a little bit this week with my work schedule.
But
anyway, I predict that by the end of this episode, your opinion of chickens will be forever changed. So let me take you back to Andrew Lawler. He wrote a book called Why Did the Chicken Cross the World? And how he ended up writing this book is pretty funny.
I'm a science writer and focus primarily on archaeology and paleontology. And I had this great idea to write an article for Smithsonian Magazine about Bronze Age sailors crossing from India to Arabia in the third millennium BC. And in order to pitch the story, I was looking at different things that those sailors from India had brought to Arabia. And so when I was speaking with the editor at Smithsonian about this, he said, well, that's all interesting. Okay, they're bringing timber and lapis lazuli and this and that. But, you know, what else did they bring? And I happened upon a little mention in a scientific report saying that on this beach in Arabia, they had found a chicken bone. And my editor said, well, that's interesting. I was like, well, what's interesting? He said, well, it's the chicken. Where did the chicken come from? What is a chicken? How did it get to be the bird that is so important today? And I said, I have no idea, but I don't write about livestock, thank you. But I decided to go ahead and pursue it and actually went to Oman on the coast of Arabia to do my initial reporting. I arrived in Oman after a long flight and driving my rental car down, got to the beach where these archaeologists were doing their dig, and it was an Italian team, and they were just coming back from their afternoon swim in the Indian Ocean. And I said to the dig director, I said, so tell me about that chicken bone that you found. And he said, oh, you mean the one that they believed was from the third millennium BC? I said, yes, that one. He said, oh, no, it turned out to be from a workman's lunch. It was misidentified. Now, you laugh, but I didn't, because I had to go and talk to my editor and say, I don't think that this is going to work out. But to their credit, they said, no, go ahead, keep pursuing it, because there is a story there about how the chicken got to be the chicken. So that sent me on this quest around the world to find out where chickens came from, what they were all about, and how they got to be the largest species of birds in the world today.
He's right, Nikki. There actually are more chickens on Earth than any other species of bird. It's actually hard to know, too, because the turnover is amazing. As they're being hatched, they're being slaughtered for food. The estimates, though, the latest estimates I've seen, 23 billion chickens alive on the planet right now. And if you added up their weight, they might be heavier than all other birds put together. And of course, we're killing them all the time.
You know what really struck me about Lawler's story as a writer is that he goes on this crazy journey and has this weird chicken bone lunch thing happen. And I would be really stressed that that would have killed the assignment. But no, his editors totally green light him to go ahead, which is amazing. And then that lights this major fire for him to find out where chickens come from. And he goes on this whirlwind journey to their original, let's call them, pecking grounds. And he discovers that one of the most famous scientists of all times also went on this journey.
Well, Charles Darwin, the famous British biologist, was one of the first people to become very interested in answering this question. And actually, it turns out that his search for understanding the origin of the chicken was a big part of developing his theory of evolution, which is not something you hear much about. You hear a lot about those finches in the Galapagos, but not much about the chickens. So as he began to piece the history of it together, it became clear that the first wild chicken, if you were, came from the area around India or Southeast Asia, because they still exist. They're called red jungle fowl. So Darwin was trying to understand how the bird became a domesticated creature. And in the course of that, he discovered these different varieties, and he was able to then trace back, really follow the history of the bird back to its origin. And biologists today have picked that up, and using more advanced techniques, they've been able to really pinpoint that the original chicken came from probably somewhere in northern Vietnam or southern China.
So how did they become domesticated?
Well, there are a couple of reasons for that. One is that unlike a lot of birds, chickens don't like to, or I should say red jungle fowl, don't like to eat grain, but they like to eat bugs. So they were a great animal to have around in the early days when people were planting crops. Now, the other thing that happened was that chickens were not domesticated for their meat or for their eggs. Jay, any idea why the bird really became domesticated?
I am waiting for you to tell me.
Cockfighting.
Really?
In fact, yes, cockfighting.
So, Nikki, did you know that?
I did not know that.
Cockfighting is a fascinating activity because the modern version, I think it was more ritual in the past, but the modern version is largely based on betting. I've got a great rooster, you've got a tough rooster, people are going to bet on either yours or mine. Not just roosters, they get equipped with these cutting spurs so that, like, there's a lot of blood. It's very violent. Occasionally, a rooster actually gets killed. But the thing is, even if they don't get killed, quite often in most cockfighting setups, if your rooster loses, he's done anyway. Kill him, just throw him on the pile with the rest of the losers. It's pretty vicious.
So it's interesting to me because I know a lot of people are turned off by the potential for these birds to be vicious. But if you really think about it, birds, including chickens, are dinosaurs. And if you look back as far as the Cretaceous, which was really just the big dinosaur boom, you had dinosaurs that were the size of chickens that looked like chickens and I'm sure acted like dinosaurs. So
yeah, exactly.
The potential to want to scrap and or at least defend yourself is absolutely there. I don't think they had spurs put on their feet back then, but that's just a little anthropomania human thing happening there.
Yeah, they might not have needed spurs if they were small running dinosaurs.
Yeah, exactly. But regardless, our relationship with this species didn't stop there.
It really wasn't until the Romans that you start to see the chicken being used for reasons other than for cockfighting and for religious purposes. Now, keep in mind, though, that for the Romans, the chicken was incredibly sacred. In fact, if you were going to go to war in Rome, first you had to check the eating habits of the sacred chickens that were kept there in Rome. This really was used as a way to decide whether or not to go to war. Now, it's almost as if Vladimir Putin had a flock of chickens in his backyard and is trying to decide whether to invade Ukraine based on whether or not those birds would peck at the grain and the food that's laid out for them. So the Romans took the capacity of the chicken to provide heavenly insight quite seriously. And they also were big on cockfighting as well as a sport. But over time, the Romans also learned that the chicken could make a really good feast. And so roast chicken became one of the most popular meals among upper-class Romans. But still, it was still a pretty scrawny bird.
You know, I find it really interesting that chickens have gone from being this sacred bird to a bird they use to decide wars and literally the fate of people to an entree. I mean, now we have chicken nuggets.
Well, you know what's weird about this is that, as you said, chickens have been related to humans in so many ways, important ways, and yet nobody ever says that chicken is noble. I mean, if you're called chicken, it's an insult. You're considered to be fearful. We don't think they're very smart. And, you know, they're barely considered animals in the United States because they're really just a product.
I know what you mean, because sometimes people say, what a bird brain. And, you know, you're probably invoking the chicken when you're hearing that. But in the last decade, we've really come to realize how smart the chicken is. And our next guest studied this and has found some pretty cool stuff.
My name is Dr. Kaylin Smith, and I'm a research fellow at the NHMRC Partnership Center for Health System Sustainability at Macquarie University.
I'm wondering why, when we know other bird species who don't look like us are smart, like corvids, why it is we continue to think chickens are dumb.
We're really only just starting to change the perspective on corvids and parrots. You know, Alex, the gray parrot that could count and could talk. And it's really only been in the last 10 or 15 years that we've started to see corvids as not stupid and think about New Caledonian crows making tools. You know, we used to think, so this is going back to Jane Goodall, only humans make tools. It's what makes us distinctive. Oh, guess what? Birds make tools. I mean, the other thing is that corvids and parrots, binocular vision. They can look at you. They can look you in the eye, and you can see the same thing with a lot of the larger flying birds. They have this sort of look of intelligence, like they're thinking about you, mostly like they look like they're trying to kill you. I mean, they do have that sort of look. But again, and I think we're also a bit divorced from the natural world. We're divorced from chickens. I mean, the most anybody thinks about chickens most of the time is regular or extra crispy. It's a food item. It's something that you encounter under plastic or in a bucket. It is not something that you encounter in your daily life. So we can see corvids and such flying around and attribute behaviors to them where we don't have that chance for chickens.
It's true. We don't see them alive in our daily lives like we see chickadees flying around outside. But scientists like Kaylin Smith are definitely doing their best to change our perspectives on chickens.
Okay, so look, if you're going to change my perspective, because I'm a little bit skeptical, sell me on chickens.
Okay, Jay, okay. Well, they come when they're called, they can do simple math, and they pass a classic intelligence test where they know when an object they've seen is hidden from them is still in existence. That sounds like a pretty smart bird to me.
Yeah, actually, you do. And you know, there is one thing that I find intriguing about them, and that is when chicks are hatched, they're immediately able to use the two hemispheres right and left of their brain, just the way we do. So imagine this, a chick tilts its head to the right, so its right eye is looking at the ground, and the brain associated with that right eye is sorting out seeds from gravel, edible from non-edible. But at the same time, because its head is tilted to the right, its left eye can be scanning the sky and telling the other side of the brain, there are no predators, we're safe, or we'd better watch out. So I think that's kind of cool.
So you can imagine if a whole bunch of chickens have an eye on the sky, that makes them safer as a flock. And they're probably communicating that information to each other, which is pretty cool. And Kaylin's been looking at these social interactions in the coop. You might call it the pecking order. And she's found that chickens, especially roosters, are capable of deceit.
They're omnivores, so they'll eat fruit, they eat insects, they'll eat lizards and mice. So you find a good piece of food, this is what males do, the they'll go through this display where they shake their head back and forth, bob up and down, pointing at it, and make very staccato that indicates that they've found food. Now, the cool part is females remember who announced food more often and will prefer to mate with him regardless of his rank. So now what you've got is this really cool dynamic where the alpha male, he can do whatever he wants. He finds food, he calls. The subordinate wants to announce this food, but he doesn't want to get beat up. So what he does is rather than doing the vocal signal, he just does the visual signal so the female sees him, takes the food, and remembers him and mates with him later. So chickens now have reputation. They can remember the behavior of individuals. So you've got this whole complex soap opera going on where the it's all in the subordinates because the alpha can do whatever he wants. The subordinates all have to find a sneaky way to do that. And what's even cooler is they have deception. So males will sometimes call when there is no food. So the female will come over and then he'll try and mate with her. Now, if he does this too often, she'll stop coming. He'll go, oh, nope, I remember him. He calls without food, I'm not going. So it's not reflexive. And that's the really cool thing is we think that they're little automatons just sort of going through the motions, but they're not. They make decisions based on what they know about the individual, what's happening in the environment.
I guess you and Kaylin have convinced me that chickens are actually a lot smarter than we might have assumed. But it doesn't surprise me that we assume that they're dumb, because what do we know about them? Most city dwellers are never even, you know, close to a chicken and certainly don't have the time to observe them. So it doesn't surprise me that we just have this blanket opinion that they're dumb and we don't think any more about it.
Yeah, right, exactly. Like a lot of kids don't even know where eggs come from or different slices of meat. Like there's a real disconnect to the food chain that way. I wonder if that might begin to change with the backyard chicken movement and people getting more exposure to their behavior. And this movement has really picked up steam during the pandemic.
I have some chickens of my own. As a matter of fact, when we finished our research at the university, we adopted out the whole flock. We didn't kill a single animal. We gave them to people, to small farms, and I took some home myself, because they were animals I had worked with for a fairly long time. I'd worked with them for over a decade. And, you know, they're like family because they recognize your face. They recognize your voice. If you want to learn how to train a dog, train a chicken, because chickens are so much easier. They remember so much more quickly and they're so much less distractible than dogs. So if you're thinking about getting a dog, get a chicken first.
Well, that's interesting advice. You know, if you're thinking about getting a dog, get a chicken first. I mean, I wonder if anyone's ever done that for that reason. I mean, Jay, would you trade in your dog, Robbie, for a chicken?
Ooh, I mean, you know, when you went through all the things indicating how smart chickens were, I was sort of thinking of Robbie and thinking, well, he doesn't come when you call him. I'm not sure he's capable of deceit, but you know what? He's my dog. I don't think I'd be trading him in yet for a chicken, but I gotta say, at this point, I'm more open-minded about having chickens in my backyard than I might have been before we started talking about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you might get the experience anyways, because we've heard that Calgary's going to have this chicken lottery to pilot backyard chickens. That might just be your neighbor, Jay. You can let us know. And that might be because backyard chickens just blew up over the pandemic, much to the delight of backyard chicken educators like Dahlia Monteroso.
I want to see chickens everywhere. My name is Dahlia Monteroso, and I am known as the president of Chickenlandia. I want to see chickens on the top of, you know, apartment buildings. I want to see chickens being raised by communities. I want to hear roosters when I'm walking down the street in the city. I think that just needs to become part of us. As we move towards a more sustainable future, I think chickens are hopefully going to have a big role in that.
So, Nikki, I guess we should point out that backyard chickens are egg layers. They're producing fresh eggs for their owners. They're not the broiler chicken that you find in the supermarket. The other thing is, there was just a study released in Toronto showing that of more than 200 licensed backyard chicken coops, There were only 5 complaints of those more than 200. So a lot of people's fears about, you know, attracting pesky carnivores or smelling bad or being loud, those don't seem to be true. Now, let's get back to Dahlia.
So what are things that you tell people about chickens that leave them really shocked? Or what don't people know about chickens that makes them smile?
I don't think people realize it's like they have personalities, you know? I mean, they come to me when I call them. They can be really cuddly, like especially if you raise them from chicks, they can want to sit on your lap. They can want to be patted on the head. They are very smart when it comes to food. But really, at least for me, they brought a lot of peace to my life. And everybody that I've talked to, they've said, yeah, I feel really peaceful in the chicken yard.
Yeah, I really love that. And I love that it brings that to her. I'm trying to think about how I feel when I go to my brother's coop. And as I mentioned, you know, there's 100 birds floating around in there. And I don't know if peaceful's the word. There's a lot of hens making this noise. And after a while, you're kind of like,
oh, I feel peaceful
already.
You're
a little bit twitchy. But I do get another kind of peace from, like, I so respect what my brother and his partner are doing to bring ethically raised produce to the world. And I really love supporting that. So I get a lot of common peace from that and knowing I'm doing my part to make the industry better, I guess.
And you know, it's really striking the different points of view, like Dahlia and you experiencing that peace in the presence of chickens compared to the way they're generally produced around the world. I mean, the poultry industry is not like that.
So if we go back to that contest Lawler was talking about, the chicken of tomorrow, that is now actually the chicken of today, it has been bred to be this very large-breasted chicken that is about 4 times the size of the bird that existed before the 1950s. It's engineered to be fully grown in 6 to 8 weeks. If human babies grew that fast, they would weigh more than 600 pounds in 2 months.
I just want to add one more set of numbers to this because they get confusing, but this is pretty incredible. That increase in growth and the rate of growth over the last, since the 50s, if that were to continue for 75 more years, and I know that's fantastic and it's not going to happen, but just imagine this. A newborn chick would weigh 2 kilos and it would be hatched from a 2.7 kilo, that'd be a 6-pound egg. And the parents would be a 350-pound hen and a just under a 400-pound rooster. So cockfighting would be the new UFC.
God. Well, thank you for that very disturbing, dystopian picture of our chicken future, Jay.
It is disturbing.
Even the way they're being raised in some places now is really kind of disturbing because it leads to all sorts of skeletal issues for the chicken, not to mention there are many, many problematic issues with how they are mass produced and slaughtered. And I think there's probably a major deep dive needed that we just can't do in this episode. I would recommend a book by Maren McKenna if you're interested. It's called Big Chicken. And you can really go deep there and get a lot more information.
And so, Nikki, the question is, where do we go from here? Is there any way to keep producing chickens to satisfy the worldwide demand and do it sustainably? Here's Andrew Lawler.
The good news is that today we have choices. We don't just have to buy the supermarket chicken that is produced in egregious industrial circumstances. We actually can find alternatives. There are local farmers that are growing chickens that predate the chicken of tomorrow, that actually are more like their ancestors, and therefore can live, I think, a more comfortable and rewarding life than those that are crammed into the industrial spaces of today. So I think we can be informed as consumers. I think we can actually make choices that allow us to still eat our chicken and eggs, but be a little more mindful about what is clearly, I would argue, humanity's most important companion.
Wow, humanity's most important companion. I'm sure there are people that might disagree with that idea, but I have to say, Nikki, we've learned things today about chickens we did not know.
I find the archaeology absolutely fascinating. And also the fact that, you know, only 70 or 80 years ago, the chicken was something completely different than it is today. And we're consuming it just exponentially more than we used to.
We've transformed them. And, you know, the sustainability issue, which we mentioned briefly a minute or so ago, you know, some people wonder, well, what about plant-based chicken imitation? And there are vegan chicken tenders on the market. The question is, could they be a significant part of sustainability? And I think we just don't know about that yet. Would you keep chickens though, Nikki? We've talked a lot about the backyard version.
Well, you know, there's nothing like a fresh chicken egg. So maybe if I lived somewhere else, I certainly would. As you know, I live in a national park.
Can I ask you about that? Sorry, you've mentioned a couple of times fresh eggs. Are they really different?
Yeah, they're a lot different. They're less watery. Some of them are quite a bit bigger. They just feel like a completely different thing than store-bought egg.
Cool. So anyway, you were saying.
So in national parks, of course, we can't have backyard chickens. You know, in some circles of bear ecologists, backyard chickens are called the new garbage for bears. So that's not going to fly.
Continuing our disrespect for them.
Yeah, that's not going to fly in Jasper. But I'm very happy to have the opportunity to visit my brother's run when I'm able. How about you, Jay? Are you entering the Calgary Chicken Lottery?
I wouldn't commit to that necessarily, but I would say that I'm way more interested in the idea than I was before we started talking about it. It is a big responsibility, right? And of course, everybody knows that with the onset of the pandemic, people were acquiring pets of all kinds, including setting up backyard chicken coops. And now, sadly, as the pandemic seems to be fading, animal shelters are getting inundated with chickens that people don't want to have anymore. So it's not a trivial thing, but I think the fact that the eggs are better is a nice reinforcement. I mean, my dog doesn't give me any particularly great product from his life, other than his love, of course, but maybe chickens could love you and give you eggs. Anyway, for those of you listening who are actually, like me, thinking about the backyard chicken thing, seriously considering it, Dahlia's got a couple of useful tips just to think about before you get drawn in by the idea of cute, fuzzy baby chicks.
Number one, please, please find out if you can have chickens where you live. I have been doing this for a long time, and I have dealt with many, many, many very upset families who, you know, either they didn't know they were, you know, they couldn't have chickens, or they knew and they thought, oh, well, I read this one breed of chicken is really quiet, so I don't think my neighbors are going to notice. But chickens sing the egg song. And if you don't know what the egg song is, it goes like this, bok, 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 bok. And they sing that a lot when they lay their eggs. They have to announce it. So your neighbors will very likely know that you have chickens. The other thing I would tell somebody is if they know they can get chickens and they're planning where to put their coop and their run. And so like the coop is the housing that the chicken is in, and then the run would be like the outdoor housing that they have. You need to make sure that there's good drainage in that area, because chickens over time, they create erosion and you can get a problem with mud.
And one more thing, if you do have chickens, resist the urge to smooch them on their beaks or really snuggle up to their feathers, because they do carry salmonella. That is a bacteria you do not want. It can make you quite sick. You could show them some love by just treating them really well.
I've got to confess that if I was tempted to smooch a chicken, I'd be afraid of getting my eyes pecked out. Anyway, it's time for us to fly the coop. On our next episode of Anthropomania, though, we're going to look at something closely that you probably don't think about too much: your garbage, and how it is literally changing certain animals and birds. Everything from their gut biome to the shape of their beaks. You don't want to miss that. So if you haven't already, make sure to hit follow on this app. And thanks a lot to today's awesome guests, Dahlia Monteroso, Kaylin Smith, and Andrew Lawler. We have links to their work and Dahlia's TED Talk in our show notes.
If you really like this episode, let us know by leaving us a review. You can also give us your feedback in our listener survey or DM us on social at Anthropomania. We're on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Don't forget to sign up for our newsletter, which has a ton of extra episode content and fun behind the scenes of our show. You can sign up on the website at anthropomania.com. See you later.
Bye.